agreed that we have a pre-briefing just to sharpen ourselves for these kind of meetings. So this exercise really is to allow the committee researchers and content advisors and the Parliamentary Budget Office to just give us a analysis, what we pick on the report or what issues that should be raised, not left unattended, as we receive in the briefing in the afternoon from the Parliament as officials, because we'll be considering performance between April 2016 to 30 September, a briefing this afternoon. So you're most welcome, members. We realize also that in between the period, the current period now is quite busy, and other members may be delayed in various committees. I've just seen most members of these committees are in the Joint Rules Committee, which was still sitting. So it could be that members will join us. But we do not require quorum. We need to proceed so that we ready for the late afternoon meeting. We also, I think, given time, have to relook into whether it is feasible to always meet before the real meeting, or we'll consider documents as circulated and interface with the offices that has prepared the documents so that we much sharper in the interest of time. At times will not, I think, fulfill this obligation to meet. The Chair, Honorable Vincent, at 2, he's got another meeting. We know that he's chairing the ad hoc committee on dealing with SABC matters. So rather let me request that we'll start with the briefings, but I must note that apologies that has been received by members from NCOP side. The other members are in provinces. Honorable De Beer and Honorable Isaac are doing their briefings on Division of Revenue. You'll note as a result of the delay in the NA, yes, deferred these matters to be handled only today by other provinces. And also from the NA, Darren.
Good afternoon, co-chairpersons, members. Two apologies. Ms. Coleman and Mr. Gwabaza, but Mr. Gwabaza is joining us in the afternoon session. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. I think we can proceed really so that we do not make it so much formal, but more of a preparatory meeting for the late afternoon session. I note the Budget Office is here, committee researchers and content advisors are here. Who starts first with the briefing? Prof, you want to kick the ball first or allow the content advisors and researchers, Parliament? Who is doing it? Okay, Advocate.
There was a hand on the other side, I'm not sure.
Thanks, Co-Chair. Colleagues, because we are complementing each other, I will just focus on one table so that I leave the rest for my colleagues. I know there is financial and non-financial. So what I'm going to do is just to look at economic classification. Then I will remark on the things that I've observed. If there is something that can still be picked up, then it's fine, so that we don't take time. Honorable members, the document that I'm using, I'm on slide 5, but on document from the Budget Office, I think it's table 3. Yeah, if you look at table 3 from the Budget Office, but if you have my presentation, it is slide 5. Now, the main thing that can be noted on this slide is that there is an understanding in almost all the categories except for the transfers. Now, I will quickly indicate where they are understanding, and then the this document. But if you have the budget office one, the green one, you can go to table 3 of this document. You don't have it. Yes, table 3. It is table 3. Okay. Thanks, honorable members. Now, when you look at the compensation of employees, the budget for the half yearly was 460,731. Actual 433,205. The variance 27526, which means plus minus 94% has been spent. But if you look at the projected spending at the year end, it's even, which is zero. Now the question that needs to be asked is, if you have not employed for a month, but you manage to employ after a month, will you still spend exactly what was planned? Maybe there is an explanation to that. Another question that can be asked is whether Parliament will be able to fill all the vacancies by the end of the financial year. Because now, if the positions have not been filled, how do you spend as planned? That should be the question. The same question can apply to goods and services. There is an underspending, but come the end of the financial year, there will be spending evenly. Now the question is, looking at the time period now, we are almost in December. Only 3 months of busy time is there. Take out January, take out part of December. It's only 3 months. Will Parliament be able to spend everything? When we do oversight over departments, we normally say to members, be on the lookout of what we call fiscal dumping. Now, that should be asked, whether Parliament, by spending as planned, it will not amount to fiscal dumping. There is nothing wrong in asking that question, because there may be an explanation, honorable members. And then there is transfers, which is already underspending, and the focus is the underspending will increase. There is a need to ask as to what is the reason. Then you have capital expenditure, which is underspending, but come the end of the year, the plan is there will be even spending. The question is, will the projects that are underway be completed by that period on time, and there will be no invoices still outstanding, and so on. That is in short from me, honorable members. I'll leave the rest with your permission to my colleagues, so that if they have picked up other things, they can comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, co-chairs. Good afternoon, colleagues and honorable members. I think our presentation is more or less on the same line, except that from our side, we'd like to touch on some of the issues that Mr. Advocate Dow did not touch into. For instance, around the expenditure issue that Mr. Advocate Dow is raising, which is an under expenditure throughout the first and the second quarter up to the midterm review process. We also noted with concern from the research point of view that in the report there seem to be no projected expenditure amount. We know that in government departments, when we assess their expenditure on a quarterly basis, we use a general expenditure benchmark of 25% per quarter, but departments will always put forward expenditure projections based on the nature of their expenditure. Right now, without that particular projection, it then makes it difficult for us to actually assess whether there is an improvement on expenditure or there is a non-improvement. And so if we are given just the figures roughly in the first quarter in program one, there was an expenditure of about 19%. In the second quarter, it grew up to 24%. And we're saying that is below the 25% norm in the absence of the expenditure projection. That is one concern that we need to register. And also probably the committee could request the institution to share those expenditure projections if they are available. And we also noted that, Chair, around the issue of goods and services, the payment for suppliers within 30 days has been one of the APP targets that was supposed to have been achieved, but was partly achieved, not achieved completely. And so we are worried about the implications if there are suppliers that are not paid within 30 days. We understand, Chair, that the payment of suppliers within 30 days has got severe implications economically, because service providers have got employees to pay, have got other projects to also commit their money into. So if you don't pay them on time, then you are compromising the value chain in that respect. But also, again, the reasons for not paying, it might go either way. You might find that in some instances, service providers have not submitted invoices on time. So we need to be mindful and be open-minded when we take this one, because there's a number of studies, co-chairs, that have been conducted by both the DPME and PSC around this very same issue, because even in government, it's a problematic issue. But also you find a situation where suppliers have not submitted on time, but also you find that suppliers have submitted on time in some instances, but the processing of those invoices have been delayed for various reasons. So we need to clear that up and check whether Parliament does have mechanisms in place that actually ensures that that particular target is being achieved and that process is being put in place. The other issue, Chair, is around the target of 1% savings that Parliament has put itself to achieve. It has not fully achieved it. Our concerns and our issues that we are raising around that one, it's actually basically the criteria as to how did you arrive at that particular target. Why 1%? Simple. Why not 5%? So if they can share a light on that one, maybe we could, the committee can be on the same on the same page because the targets when they are set, there should be a very clear groundwork that has been done on the ground to inform those targets. You see, because at the end of the day, you run a risk if you've not done that particular spade work. You run a risk of having targets being exceeded or being ambitious, too ambitious, and not being realistic. So we really want to raise that with the committee, that to say targets are very much important to be set realistically and to be compliant with the SMART principle that we all know. And one of the academic studies that one has conducted recently around this very same issue, we picked up something that is very interesting as a finding that says public service managers, in particular program managers, who are not in the FMO or financial management office, don't believe that they should be a expected to understand the financial management prescripts and savings and all those kinds of things, because that's the function of an FMO. So it calls upon the institution as a whole across the board to say, how do you bring about awareness to program managers? Because by virtue of being managers, they are managing resources. And so for the institution to actually save that 1% or whatever target it is, all program managers must be able to understand the rationale behind that. And around the issue of the targets, Chair, we've circulated a document, Chair, where we've highlighted the targets that have been achieved, the targets that have not been achieved in red, those that have been achieved, we've highlighted them in green, just to show that some work has been done. So it's a document that looks like this. That's when we are outlining all those issues. But our argument, Chair, we are also taking it further in terms of the achievement of targets. We're saying, even though some of the targets were achieved or exceeded, we need to look at now a situation where we go beyond just achieving targets, but we ought to ask about the impact that the achievement of those targets have on the ground. Is the achievement of those targets translating into a quality debate, for instance, in the House? Is the achievement of these targets translate into a better fiscal oversight and expenditure throughout? Is the achievement of those targets translate into members being able to look at different policy alternatives and policy scenarios other than just policies that are being presented by the executive? So those are some of the things that we think that the committee should also look at in terms of making sure that when targets are achieved, it's not just a question of number crunching, but it's all about the impact. To remember that the government moved in 2009 from what we call an output-based approach into an outcome-based approach, where the DPME as a department was established to try and bring a policy certainty around that space so that we make sure that whatever that is implemented is actually yielding results of an outcome. Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if my colleague would want to add something on this.
Good afternoon, members. I think that my colleague has already covered lots that we would discuss now. But another thing that he left out is that Parliament, the way that it reports, it needs to be improved. Because you look at the targets, they are only based on quantity, not on a qualitative one. So we found that it's difficult for us to approach this analysis to try to analyze it, because you can't only raise issues on a quantitative. Because we will say, for example, they want to produce the research papers of 5 research papers. If they say, no, we met the target because we produced the research papers, and then one would ask, what is the impact of those research papers? So it is one point that need to be clarified. Also, even the whole reporting format, it's not user-friendly, even to researchers. Sometimes you find that you don't understand exactly what they are trying to put forward. And then it is difficult for you as an analyst to analyze it and come up with, identify some issues. So I think that part of reporting also is very important. You need to look at it. Maybe when we meet the accounting officer, it should be highlighted. I know that even the Act is not clear in terms of guiding them to develop those reports, like the National Treasurer, as they do to departments. They have a Treasury guideline where it shows them how they should report. So Parliament, I think it needs the same format also. It needs to be guided as to how to report to the committee. Otherwise, if the reporting is in this fashion, then we'll always miss out some of the issues. Now I think we would have identified lots of issues, more than we can say now, if the reporting format was proper. So we need to raise it strongly so that next year when we report again, they report where we highlight the actual issues, not to leave anything out. That's all for.
No, thanks very much. I'll allow the budget office to proceed with the briefing, and then later members can follow up on areas that need further clarity. Thanks.
Thanks,
Prof.
My colleagues have mentioned important issues, Honorable Smith as well. I think we need to start by indicating that this is the first opportunity that we're having to exercise oversight over Parliament. I don't think it's been done since 1994, which causes some issues as well. But I think the point here, Honorable Chairs, is the budget is nothing more than the financial expression of your strategic plan. And I think that's where we start with these things. Since 1994, I think, we spoke about the developmental state. We spoke about other issues as well, and now we come to the NDP. And this needs to be reflected in how we actually look at the strategic plan and how this is guided or guiding the way we roll out the institution in this regard. Indicating that, Chair, I think there's guidance needed on what then is the strategic plan that guides, you know, how the budget is being allocated. What are the targets and how are these outputs achieved? And that's why I agree with both my colleagues who presented, and they made very important inputs in this regard at the micro level. So who's guiding this process if the budget is the financial expression of your strategic plan? Who exercises oversight that it delivers? And a lot of people argue, Honourable Chairs, Honourable Members, that we still have a Verwoerdian Parliament. Since 1994, nothing has changed, really. You know, it's just been the continuation of the kind of system we're at. And it, this reflects, Chair, not only in the management, but in the staffing, et cetera, et cetera. And also the clients. Because I think the client of the Secretariat of Parliament is members of Parliament. And I think that needs to be very clear. We're not here to serve ourselves, but we're here to serve, you know, members of Parliament. So how then are staff aligned to these whole areas, and how does our client view the service that is being provided here in this regard? Therefore, this becomes more important a committee than any other committee in Parliament at this stage. The other thing then, Chair, is more on the specific issues, and I think my colleagues touched on it as well, is with budget reform comes public sector reform or reform of the public service. So if you want to look at how you reform the budget, you need to look at how your staffing, your needs are required, how you align that, you know, to the budget reform process, which impacts on structure, function of Parliament itself. So it's a bigger job, Honourable Chairs, you know, than just the kind of nitty-gritty on why we're not spending. Or that is critical, but you need to look at it from the top, because strategic direction provided by this committee will ensure that how you utilize your financial and human resources becomes critical in this aspect. So budget reform and how we spend goes hand in glove, Chair, with, you know, how we see the reform of the civil service in Parliament and how we see us servicing our clients, which is members of Parliament, and how we fulfill this function. I mean, Honourable Smith, Honourable Mohai, you know, in the States or even Uganda, an average member of Parliament has 20 people, including interns, you know, which you can pull up. We have joblessness in this country, 27% I see. And we can recruit interns, you know, at 5,000 rand a month, give them the opportunity, guided by senior people, which we have in Parliament. So I think these are some of the new issues we need to explore. You know, besides just saying, well, you know, we're not spending or we're spending. I think it's a fundamental structural reform required, Honourable Chairs, in how we treat our client and how we align the strategic direction. So, Chair, just in that regard, in terms of the summary, and I'll ask Nelia to maybe go a bit more into detail, there's a few issues that have concerned us, and I think some of the issues raised by our colleagues on targets, etc., is critical. But, for example, some of the smaller micro issues, reporting on donor funds, we don't see that. Estimated overexpenditure on associated services for transfers, adjustment needs, the differences between the appropriation in terms of the Appropriation Act and the allocated amount to Parliament. So these are some of the more nitty-gritty issues. But I think without the context of the broader strategic direction by this venerable committee, I think these issues become aside. So, Chair, if you don't mind, just maybe give over to Nelia. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Prof. I totally agree with everything that my colleagues just mentioned, but just one thing in terms of the targets that we set and how we report on it. We must just be careful to recommend to Parliament to try and develop quality indicators than quantitative numbers, because we've run into a lot of problems with the AG in terms of they think 100% target is showing quality, but it's not really showing quality. It just makes it very difficult to report. So at the end of the day, we don't reach our targets because it's just so difficult to report. They don't have any evidence just because they're trying to show that they're producing quality. So we must just be careful you can, and it's possible to develop quantitative targets as long as it's in line and it directs to your strategic objective and your outcome, because then that's the way that you make it measurable, your outcomes, as long as it's in line and it contributes to the outcome. So you will also see in this document that I prepared for members, the PBO document, that I didn't just concentrate on the midterm report. I concentrate on more of the underlined issues within Parliament. So I started with the legislative requirements and the report in terms of the FMPPLA. But then I did some more reading or research, and my colleague indicated that they don't use the guidelines and frameworks from Treasury. But why don't they use it? They're supposed to use it, and in the FMPPLA, in Section 16, they indicate that formats of the budget and other documents must be consistent with other organs of state. So they say it in their own act, but they don't implement it. So they're contradicting their own act, basically, in terms of the frameworks. And in Section 17, submission of budget documentation to National Treasury. All these documents that they submit to Treasury must be in the format that Treasury requires. So why don't they submit it in the same format to this committee, the more detailed information? Section 18 indicates that annual appropriations and approvals, this section, I've got an old version, because I've expanded on that section, that basically indicates that Parliament must appropriate money received through the annual national budget according to main division. And that hasn't happened, because in the current Appropriations Act, there's only one amount. And the FMPPLA requires Parliament to appropriate the allocations, what they do to have to the main divisions. They must also appropriate that, and that hasn't happened. So we're actually spending illegally. That's what I'm saying, because the money, the funds that Parliament allocate is a different amount than what was appropriated in the Appropriations Act. Parliament must approve the use of donations, own revenue, and the use of unspent funds not used in the previous financial year. I'm not sure whether Parliament really has approved that, because the additional amounts come from unspent funds and own receipts, which Parliament also allocates with the appropriation from National Treasury. So they don't report on it, and Parliament hasn't approved it, not that I know of, because if it has been appropriate, it would have been tabled and approved. In Section 53 is about the mid-year report. This is the report that we are discussing now. And in this report, they must have expenditure and performance, which they do have. They must also have progress on resolving problems identified and the annual report. I haven't seen that in the mid-year report. And they must also identify the needs for adjustments, and I also haven't seen any identification of any adjustments in the mid-year report. And then I also went to the PFMA just to basically confirm what I'm saying, that they must adhere to the Treasury guidelines. So the Section 3 of the PFMA indicates that if any inconsistency between the PFMA and any other act, the PFMA prevails. So in terms of this, we can enforce or basically recommend that they use the correct frameworks and guidelines distributed by the National Treasury. So then in terms of their reporting on revenue, I didn't use their tables, because I thought I'll make my own tables, because we need to stay independent and do independent analysis. So table one is the table from Parliament, where they indicate that they're going to over-collect on interest. But then I did my own table two, and I just added a line, donor funds, because in their revenue table that they report to this committee, they didn't report on donor funding, and Parliament also receives donor funds. So I think that's important that we know how much funding we receive. Table 3 is the Parliament's table on actual expenditure, but you can also see they report actual expenditure in terms of a half-year budget as well. They didn't indicate the picture against the full-year budget. So you will see they are basically underspending at this stage. They're only on 45% expenditure. So if they continue with this kind of trend, then they might underspend more than what they think they're going to underspend. The underspending on direct charges must be returned to the revenue fund, but they also indicated that associated services will overspend. But all of the other programs are basically underspending, and they didn't indicate that they can shift money from one of the other programs to cover the possible estimated over expenditure on Program 5. In Table 4, in the sixth column, I showed the expenditure against the year to date. Table 5, I tried to also link, they've already submitted the medium-term budget to this committee. So I'm just trying to show the members that the medium-term budget that they've submitted is actually unrealistic in terms of current expenditure, the way they're spent currently, and also in terms of the actual outcomes for 2015-16. It's just to show members the comparison between the new MTEF that they are estimating. Table 6 is again the table submitted by Parliament, but then I'm actually suggesting that they report in the same way as we've got it in Table 7, because we don't really know on which item. So I try to take it down to a lower level, on an item level, because we need to know on what they spend in terms of goods and services. We don't want the just the summary on goods and services of all the different items. And this will definitely assist us to do a better analysis of the information if we can get that on a quarterly basis. You will see that gray column, the 2015-16, I just tried to get those numbers from the annual report. So you can already see, just in terms of stationery, the budget that they originally submitted to Treasury was 10.2, and then they've spent 22.3 million in 2015-16, but the budget for 2016-17 is only 10.9 million. So then we can see, is that really realistic if they've spent almost double in 2015-16? So we can't really analyze whether they put a credible table budget together if we don't have this detailed information. I also looked at the revised annual performance plan that they submitted. I've got a few comments on the annual performance plan. In terms of the guidelines, they don't adhere to the guidelines at all. There's no way that one can do a reconciliation between the budget allocations and the outputs and the performance of the programs. They just do it very high level. All the programs contribute to almost the same strategic objectives. They've got strategic objectives and other objectives, so it's very difficult to really to assess the plan and to determine whether the outputs contribute to the outcomes and the goals. I also looked at the annual just a quick look at the annual report. That is also totally a disaster, the annual report. They don't adhere to the guidelines, and there's a lot of mistakes in the annual report, especially in the HR. The information there, some of the information is not credible at all. The sequencing of the sections in the annual report is not what is required, and there's also some of the sections that are required in the annual report are not in Parliament's annual report. Yes, and the annual report in terms of the FMPPLA, they also have to indicate the detailed information of long-term investments. I tried to look, I may be wrong, but I couldn't see a long-term investment for the accumulated surplus funds and that 22 million that we got on interest. I couldn't find that total amount anywhere. In terms of a long term, the longest investment I could find was a 6 month investment. So I'm not sure whether we do have long term investments, but if we do have, it should have been reflected in the annual report. And then, yes, I indicated some of the divisions that's supposed to be in the annual report is not there, because an annual financial statement should be summarized in the annual report, and that's not there. I couldn't find that. It's just all the annual financial statements, and it should be in a more easier, user-friendly way summarized in the front part of the annual report. And then Prof went through the summary, and so yes, so in the summary I've just highlighted some of the things that I also think needs to be discussed with the department. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Okay, thanks very much, Budget Office, Ilya and Prof. So, members, Honorable September, you want to raise some few issues before you go for another meeting? Just to let me give you the opportunity. Very useful information, I think, has been shared in dealing with this Parliament Performance Report for the stated period. And it looks like as we continue to do more work on this, it will also help clearly if we pay a lot of attention on details. Also within the broader, how does Parliament receive attain its broader vision, Parliament transform for the better. So I leave it up to you, Honorable Gayla. I've had a very important matter that you are passionate about, the 30-day payment. It's a crucial matter that we raise, but how does Parliament comply, and does it have a system? Lead by example. So you need to put the best system for Parliament. All what we are saying, I think, is that Parliament must distinguish itself amongst the rest. It must be really a tribune of the people, and that's how it connects in terms of confidence and trust, that it is really where it is the end all. Honorable Connie.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you very much for everyone that made a contribution and have gone through all of these documents. We obviously, well, I certainly must find a little bit more time to go through finer details of everything that you have said. What I want to respond to, Chair, is I heard what all of you said on the difficulty that you are experiencing with just looking at how Parliament has compiled all of this and the methodology that they have used and not sticking to the Treasury regulations and all of those things. But I think that might be the case, but I think for our purpose, what is important that we obviously would want an outcome also. Parliament has set aside X amount of money, and then Parliament has allocated them into different programs. And I think it would have helped also if you look at the different programs that Parliament have put in there and what the outcomes of those programs are, because they either have not achieved those programs, which then have a cumulative effect on the financing, because that's your first indicator. First indicator is not the 12 rand. The first indicator is, have they been able to achieve that which they have set themselves out. So I think for us the living thing is always, if they said that they would want to have strategic leadership and governance. And what does that mean? And what have they achieved with regards to that? So I would ask that you don't discard that part, that you look at that also, and you then have to add the financing to that. And then tell us, because that's what Parliament has said. They said to us that these are the things that they would want to do or have done for the year ending in this. And therefore, they're either close to these objectives or not. Because this report is also about seeing whether indeed they have done that. So I want to argue that I don't think you should say you have not been able to find a way to look into this only. You have to explain to us the methodology that you have also used to come to that conclusion, and why would you have then excluded some of these the main things. I think we'll have to check the other things that you have said on the different things that Parliament have done or have not done. I was obviously also looking in here to see, Chair, there's a section on capacity building which I can't find. If somebody can help me with that, which I wanted to see how Parliament is allocating resources on capacity building stuff and what they are using. I think it's a chat that I had with yourself to say that the allocations that Parliament's supposed to set aside for those capacity building programs is probably up for scrutiny, and they're probably not complying with the prescripts around that also, and that's quite important. I lastly want to say, Chair, this report is about who, and it's about what, and that's important also. The main recipients of whether Parliament are doing what they're supposed to, and the main recipients and those that will feel it immediately are ourselves as members of Parliament. So, of course, we look at this also with another eye to see whether that which they have put in here are living up to, and we are receiving all of that. So, Chair, I wanted to make those contributions. I find it useful with the preparations that they have made, and the timing of doing all of it is obviously up for scrutiny. We don't always have enough time. But on that basis, Chair, may I say thank you very, very much, and may I say goodbye also. My apologies to the members that came in. It is not a reflection on yourselves.
Okay. Well, let me welcome both Honourable Inazen and Honourable Waters, who were made aware that there's a Joint Rules Committee sitting. Probably you are from the Joint Rules Committee, yes. Okay. So we welcome if there are specific questions based on the Budget Office and researchers' work, if you may, so that we just respond to those issues. Chair?
Thanks, Chair. I think like Honourable September, the micro issues are very welcome, you know, the small rents and cents. I think that's going to help us. But I'm more interested, Prof, in your submissions. In our very first meeting, we asked this question. Remember, we formed this committee after the stress plan had been put in place for 5 years. Now, you're asking the question, is the financials talking to the stress plan? And we obviously say that that's one of the things that we need to look at. I think what will be useful for us is to answer that question. If you are able to come to us and say, this is your stress plan, but your financials for 2015-16 are nowhere near going to meet that stress plan, we are then able to hold them accountable, because we very much tied in this case. So I think, or my understanding certainly, and I would imagine members' understanding, was you were going to answer those questions for us. We discussed them in our own caucus here, and then take them to the broad meeting. Because it's a problem. For the next 4 years or 3 years, we're going to be tied up with the strat plan that has been approved before this committee was set into place. So that was the first one that I wanted to raise. Then on your highlighting that the allocations are not, or the budget is not allocated according to the main divisions. I'm not denying whether it's right or wrong. The question that I'm just asking so that we can ask them, I know in departments there's this thing called environment that you can do that. Are you suggesting in your input here that there's no evidence? Now, I don't know how environment works. I would imagine you've got to go to the minister and get permission to do environment. Are you suggesting that here there's no indication of that? Because if there isn't, then we must ask the question, on what basis are you moving money or not allocating it according to the budget? So if you could assist us in that regard so that we ask the hard questions this afternoon. And then the final one, and this is just my comment, maybe for understanding, ma'am. You indicated that the financial summary should be upfront and then the actual. Now, in the annual reports that I look at, you would normally get the narrative, if you will, for want of a better word, the performance. Then you get the AGES report, which is the detailed report. There's no summary. So when you say summary, are you talking about something different, or what is it that you're talking about? So that's the question that I'm asking, because the annual reports wouldn't have a high-level summary. Because, see, on the one side, you say, let's have a high-level summary, and on the other side, you say, we should actually raise the question that they're giving a summary as opposed to digging in, which I agree with you, that you can't give me a broad summary, because you then hide the stationaries, you hide the whatever. So I would rather we had all those line items as far as humanly possible, because then we can zoom into the actual transaction line. So I was just not sure when you were saying a summary up front and then the actuals at the bottom, but that is just for my own purposes. But otherwise, Chair, I'm happy that we are able to ask some of the hard questions. And also, I'd ask for an apology because there's a man call on SABC, that was the water that I'm busy planning for, so I'm going to run away now. But the one question that I wanted to raise here that maybe we must just consider, and I'm not sure, I received just now a note from, or a letter from Nehau, raising a whole host of issues. Now, I know that we had said we don't want to get involved in the labor kind of matters, but it's almost their second letter where they're saying, but we want an audience. So I think we must decide as a committee, do we really want to grant them that? Because when I read this letter, it really talks about HR, in other words, employee-employer matters more than our matters. But we'll be duty-bound to respond to it one way or the other as this committee. So I thought I'll just raise that just so that Darren and them, depending on our own input, must raise them. My own personal view remains unchanged, that matters of HR shouldn't be, or our business should not be contaminated by matters of HR. But that, I think, is a committee matter. So I thought I'd just raise that, because I think at some point we can't continue to ignore them. We'll have to give them a comprehensive answer, other than just acknowledging receipts. So I thought if I'd raise those, Chair, and then ask for to be excused until 6 o'clock when we meet formally.
No, thanks. Thanks, Chair. You are relieved.
I beg your pardon? No. My voters will understand. This one is very difficult that I'm dealing with now. No, it's got nothing to do with you and I.
I think there was a comment made by Budget Office in relation to the annual report. We make a comment based on the annual report and the HR that it looks a bit shaky. I'll... If you can repeat that point, I think, just to clarify the point that you made earlier, it will be helpful, I think, in relation. Maybe it's part of the issues that the labor is raising, relates to some disastrous maybe challenges that we could be in the HR. So but we most welcome to maybe to even restate for the benefit of members some few pointers that you made, and then I can give the researchers just to do the overview if you want to comment further, the researchers on the document. Honorable Gaela.
No, I was just lifting my ball pen up. But anyway, assuming that you said...
What a way of lifting your pen.
No, one has to welcome the presentation. They are eye-opening. As you are aware that I missed a lot of meetings because of NCOP programs. And Chairperson... I'm a bit not sure. You know, we oversight departments. And if Parliament is not an example, Prof, then what? Then what? I was listening to you here and the researchers talking of 30 days not being met. And it's true, it's one of my passions that, because I deal with a lot of these emerging sectors who are destroyed because this 30 days is not met. And I hammer these ministers over that. But now if this main body that we call Parliament that makes these laws, it makes them and breaks them. That's what we are saying, Chairperson. It makes them and breaks them. It reminds me of one certain homeland leader that once said, we make the laws and we break them. Then I agree with you. We still got those old Verwoerdian systems in place. I also agree with you. If you go to other parliaments, the support staff for members, you got more than enough support staff, but yeah, as a member, you better. So I agree with you with that one as well. And then you sit there outside with these young school kids who have left school, who need, experience, which could be taken into Parliament so that they gain that experience. They can then get there into the economy. So I welcome your presentation, but... it's eye-opening for me, and I welcome it, as well as the researchers as well. I welcome your presentation. It's thank you very much for your presentation. But I'll take some issues forward with the researchers and so and so. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Gail. Yes, Prof. Anelia.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of Honorable September, question about the programs, and so it's very difficult because they don't adhere to the guidelines and the frameworks. It's very difficult to reconcile the budget with the performance information because the budget is per program and per sub-program, but that is not how they compile their performance information in the APP. And then in terms of the detail of capacity building, we don't know how much we spend on capacity building because they don't provide us for that detailed information, so we don't know. That's why I've got that table per item, so it will be useful if they report on a quarterly basis per those lower level items. Honorable Smith also had a few issues. The strat plan aligned to the budget, that's the same one. It's very difficult because they don't comply to the framework to determine on what they spend and to make that linkage between expenditure and performance. In terms of the not allocated and allocated not appropriated per division, they do allocate per division, but it's not appropriated, because National Treasury only appropriated the total amount that they transferred to Parliament. Then transfer used their own revenue plus that allocation and allocated to the divisions, but it hasn't been appropriated, but it has been allocated. In terms of the annual report on page 123 and 125, there are just like big errors in the HR section. And even the calculations that I did in terms of the percentages that they've spent, or there's big errors in the annual report. And yes, Honourable Gaylor just gave a comment.
Honourable Rotas.
Chair, thank you. And sorry for us, apologies for being late, and apologies to the presenters, but we had to stay in joint rules. So just on the issue that was raised about the annual report being incorrect with regards to human resources, can we get more detail as to what exactly is incorrect? Is it the amount spent? Is it the number of personnel, et cetera, or the grades? If you could just unpack that, please. Thank you.
There was just one on page 123 that I picked up. They indicated that 95% of level D positions got performance bonuses. I don't think that's true. We didn't get. Nobody on level D got performance bonuses. And here they indicate 95% within the salary band got performance bonuses. On page 125, the table on performance rewards, performance by salary band for senior and top management, they actually indicated that levels E and F didn't get any, and in this document they did get. And then the calculations in terms of grand totals, I can show you the percentages. The total percentages should be 100 and it's zero.
If you look at the percentages of totals, then
Those are just two examples that I took out. I didn't really go through each and every table and try and find the evidence of the information, but those are just the ones that popped out when I looked the page through the annual report.
Okay. We deferred the minutes for the later meeting in the afternoon. Okay. Yes, I think. All right.
Just related to the presentation by the Secretary of Parliament around the projected budget spend for the coming year, and one of the items there related to the ERP. And a new process to be about to embark upon to get new service providers in, etc. There were some comments made by the Secretary to Parliament which at this stage don't appear to be borne out by the facts. And I wanted to request if we could get a report, because Parliament's about to embark on a major expenditure exercise on an ERP, and it may not be necessary, given the exigencies of the current system, and perhaps an overstating of obsolescence. And I'm very concerned that we're about to spend a lot of money that's unnecessary going forward.
Thanks, Honourable. Yes, let me give the research office.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. We want to just put more emphasis on one or two issues that our colleagues have raised. For instance, the issue of reporting on the annual report. Chair, you'll recall when we presented that annual report analysis that we raised that issue very sharply. And to get a support from our colleagues, it really clarifies the fact that our concern was genuine. And maybe, Chair, going forward on this one, it might be one of the issues that can trigger a conversation between this committee and the institution to really clarify the issue around reporting. Because when you engage them on a different levels, I remember I had to engage them to get some of the information that was on part of the annual report on finances when we were doing that particular analysis. For instance, the annual appropriation statement is not part of the annual report. And that statement, Chair, is very crucial for one to really assess whether the resources that are dispersed in terms of the Appropriations Act have been utilized accordingly. You are able to assess the targets that are being achieved every financial year versus the money spent using that particular table. And with that table again, Chair, you are able to see the variance that have been moved over time and shifts that have been done over time. We know, Chair, that the PFMA, in terms of government, it says there's a threshold of about 8% that departments must actually move. Maybe also we need to open another debate to say, is Parliament also binded with that probably 8%? Now, with the absence of that table, you can't assess that. So it speaks to the issue of reporting as a whole, Chair, that maybe the committee might need to have a conversation to clarify that. Because when I engaged them in another level, they told me that, no, we're not reporting in terms of government standards. We've got our own reporting standards and our own reporting frameworks, which are a requirement for Parliament. So if we start reporting on things that government is reporting on, then the AG comes very sharply to deal with us. And so I think, Chair, probably to bring that understanding to the fourth before members, I think we may need some sort of a workshop or a forum where institution and the committee will be able to clarify these things. I also, that a professor was raising, that there has been no oversight to Parliament for the past period. And therefore, Chair, we are still going to harbor around these, some of these issues of reporting and stuff like that, because there is no model that has been used in the past for oversight. And the committee has got a prerogative and a responsibility to shape that particular a focus for oversight purposes. Because if the reports that are being produced, Chair, to committee does not serve the purpose, then that weakens the oversight function of the committee. Now, we need to find a way of actually tackling that so that we are able as researchers to do our work in a very explicit way to be able to assist the committee strengthen that particular area. Around the HR issues, on the very same annual report, there are issues that we also raised, Chair, there, that our colleagues are also raising. For instance, the issue around promotions is reflected in the annual report. But our main issue was that we have not seen any promotion being in Parliament implemented other than vacancies that were open and people moved from one area to another through a clear application process that everyone goes through it. So maybe we need to go back and redefine the promotion, what it means. So those are some of the concerns. But also, Chair, what we wanted to raise from our side, Chair, was that this meeting also should serve as a follow-up on commitments that were made in the last engagement with the institution around some of the issues that were teased out in that annual report. So we can probably use this meeting, and that's why I also agree with my colleague, Anelia, when she says the midterm review report should actually have some of the issues that are responding to the annual report that were raised during that particular period. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Very quickly, Chair, I think the issue that Honourable Smith mentioned about, you know, which I've indicated, the budget is nothing more than the financial expression of your strategic plan. And I think this is the role of this committee. You know, you can't run away from it if you're there to interrogate other departments. And as a committee, you sit there and there's no strategic plan, there's no budget aligned to it. Unfortunately, this committee is ultimately held accountable for that. You're the executive authority in this case. So I think those are issues that we can't say has been implemented, but we can't change it. It needs to be changed, needs to be implemented. The point then also is, who's the client? And for me, it's obvious. The client is, Honourable Gaylor, your point, is members of Parliament. You're here to service members of Parliament. You're not a self-serving institution. And how do you build this out to make sure that members of Parliament are serviced? How do you get the system like in the States where each MP has 25 people supporting them, including addressing the unemployment problem of bringing in interns, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the issues I think that you need to, you know, bother ourselves with, Chair, in the long term going forward. So that you move this Parliament, whether it be towards a national development plan Parliament or developmental state or, you know, But I think these are some of the critical issues that you need to guide on. The point I think also, Honourable Gaila, you made, and Honourable September, how the programs are set up. Now, for Evans, I don't know, you know what I mean, but how you came to a title like strategic leadership, or that I can only ask you, you know, how you got to that kind of allocation. But I mean, it just doesn't make sense in the sense of how you look at your strategic plan, how you allocate your budget in that sense, Honourable. You know. But surely, I think we're at a stage now where the client should be addressed. You know, members of parliament should get the benefits of why you're here as a secretariat and how you serviced in that regard. The rest, everything else is secondary to those processes. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Prof. I think members would agree that the exercise is quite useful, as recommended by the previous meeting, that we, prior to a formal engagement, we just have a session with the researchers and the budget office. And I think this is the first engagement of the budget office also formally. And similarly, the researchers' work on the annual report was quite good. So I believe that some of the areas that we are noting, because we are having a meeting later this afternoon, we, out of the engagement, it will be clear which are issues that the committee knows, and to prepare a package of recommendations that when we adopt the report arising out of this exercise, it's quite clear which issues that are outstanding that we need to grapple with in terms of dealing with the reporting format and many other issues that were raised. For instance, targets, how they are set, how do we really differentiate from quantitative to qualitative target setting and so forth. And out of that meeting, I think it will enable us. I think I must say to Honorable Hazen and Waters that the recommendation was made that prior to the House rising, we just have a last meeting where we consider the report so that we discuss the recommendations and whatever, consolidate the package. So I think, members, it will be in order. That's to allow for the discussion this afternoon. The matter you raised on the minutes, I think it should be reflected later.
Chair, the problem with it is that I'm not going to be at the meeting at 6. Oh. I wondered if I could leave it in your hands to please put my request. But I think that Parliament's about to expend a great deal of money in upgrading the current ERP now in November. And if it's going to change over to a new system, I think it might be fruitless and wasteful expenditure going forward. But also, I think that the Secretary of Parliament should motivate to this body why we need to migrate. Because I think that the reasons given at the last meeting may not be borne out by facts that have emerged. And I think that's the concern that we're going to. I don't want to be accused of letting this ball through the net next year when we spend tens of millions of rand migrating to a new system. And it was not something this committee, as the financial overseers, were motivated to why it should be taking place. So can I leave that in your capable hands, and I'll ask the Honourable Waters to carry that forward as well. So I think we're on the verge of spending money that we don't need to. And given the tight fiscal envelope that Parliament's operating in already, I think that money could be better spent elsewhere. But, I mean, I would want to be motivated to why we would embark upon such a process.
No, thanks. I think it is in order. We'll raise the matter, I think, in a meeting. I think we will have to find time where just to sharpen our ways of working as a committee so that we have adequate time. I know that we said in between Wednesday, but because it was the end of a term, members are running around because his committee is comprised of chairs and people who hold portfolios in various ways, chief whip of the opposition here and so forth. So it's quite busy. So we may need to find time. Because I remember that some of the issues were raised specifically out of the annual report that we needed follow-up from the Secretary of Parliament and the team to provide follow-up on. But I think we'll deal with them when we deal with the report. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. Let's adjourn.
Orlando. Hmm? Yes, no, I am not going there.
Are you not going?
I've already said, tell the chair. Look, it's not compulsory for us.
Oh. Now, I want to run late so that I can be excused on Friday for play. When you go shopping. That's why I'm doing it.
You know, we got no Muslims on Friday. And I will make sure that my children bought that plane Friday 6 o'clock to go home. I've already told him, and I already told Isia. He must make sure to tell me why there's no meeting on Friday.
On Friday.
I also want to go to Black Friday.
No, I want to go. That's why I'm working out extra time so my boss can give me off.
How is that? It's all over.
The shop's open at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
But I want to buy my stuff for Christmas already.
Oh, okay.
That's the idea.
I hear you. I don't actually do Christmas.
You don't? Why?
Ah, no, man.
The money thing.
No, it's a Eastern